question and answer session with the questions that have been posted online. I encourage you to keep posting questions if you think of them. If you could help me by indicating which presenter your question is for, that would help me direct it to the right person. And then if we have time, we'll open up the phone lines for questions. So the first question we have is for Roger, and that question is, for the few month test, are there seasonal factors to take into account?
Yeah, I'm assuming that the person who asked the question is asking about the drainage optimization tests in Kansas City and Chicago, and I think there could be some seasonality for sure in those the movement patterns that we see there. I think it's a little more evident in the Chicago test. There was a spike in sort of the total number of loads from August to September, which I understand is sort of the Christmas season for logistics anyway, starts around August or thereabouts. So I think there is some seasonality there. But what we were mainly trying to do was just evaluate what was the total level of business and how did these key metrics like the bobtail miles and the number of trips and bobtail status change during the test period. And I'm not sure seasonality would necessarily affect that so much. You know, if anything, there could be even more bobtails probably in the peak season because there's just more trips going on, so there's more opportunities to drive back empty without knowing about a better load opportunity.
Okay, thank you. Another question for you, Roger. Can you expand on the challenges and successes in incorporating port gate processing information?
Yeah, for the intermodal move exchange simulations, we obtained gate move data from the participating railroads in Kansas City, which were Norfolk Southern, Union Pacific, and BNSF. And then for Chicago, we got gate move data moving between two railroads, a western one and an eastern one. That was the Union Pacific and the CSX. In terms of what were the challenges and successes, I guess one of the big challenges is just getting the data, and I think the way we overcame that was, the implementation team overcame that because they're the ones that actually obtained the information, was to the people that were working on the CTIP implementation were former railroad employees themselves, sort of like Randy is, so they already knew the people to contact, and more importantly, possibly the railroads already knew them, which made it a little bit less maybe intimidating for somebody in the rail industry to share their information. So I think that helped. In terms of actual challenges with the data that we received from the railroads, it was surprisingly detailed. I think we got a lot of great information, like the in-gate, time the container was in-gated, the ID of the container and ID number for each container, and what they were doing in the terminal, things like that. Probably the weakness was when they actually outgated, because as I understand, most terminals don't necessarily care when a truck or a load outgates. They're more interested in the in-gate operations. So that was a challenge, and we had to make some assumptions based on if a certain container in-gated at one terminal and then in-gated at another one across town, say an hour later, then we knew it must have outgated probably 30 minutes beforehand, and you had to make some assumptions based on that about when the load actually outgated. That was pretty much the biggest challenge associated with the gate move data that we got.
This is Jerry. Can I weigh in for a second?
Sure.
At the ports, the number one issue that the truckers have identified for us is actually the wait time at the terminals, getting in and getting out, mostly getting in. And our vendor showcase we had last week showed me that the technology is evolving to provide this information exchange while the trucks are in line, so that they can automate it as much as possible when they get to the gates, plus providing information to the trucking companies about the wait times, either whether it's a TV monitor or some other method. And that's basically one of the things they ask us to help them solve. They asked me to actually try to influence the terminal operators in their operation. I can't do that, but we can basically get them information. If they can determine, for example, that the wait time at some terminals are too long and they have another opportunity to go pick up another container at our terminals, once again, we have 13 or 14 of them, then they can make a decision. For them, it's about providing them that information and making the wait time as efficient as possible. Part of our ITS implementation plan, we'll develop some techniques, and we got some encouraging stuff from the private sector we saw last week that might be able to do that in a fairly efficient fashion.
Jennifer, I'd like to also make a comment about the data. This is Randy. When we were getting the data from the railroad specifically, we basically had to assign a non-disclosure that, first of all, it was scrubbed of any competitive information within the data. But it is a very extensive process in getting data to support these applications, and that's where we really need to understand the relationship between the benefits and what we're trying to accomplish here with the private sector. As we started to show more of our benefits throughout the test, the CTIP test, then we got more cooperation, specifically from the drayage companies. They really saw the benefit of applying these applications, and they had no problem sharing the data once they understood the benefits.
All right, thank you. The next question was for Jerry, and that is, could you explain how you would go about platooning trucks?
Well, we don't know yet. We're trying to figure it out. It's been done. The platooning concept has been demonstrated down in San Diego here in Southern California, where they put a bunch of cars operating at 60 miles an hour on one of the freeways down in San Diego. The classic picture of the drivers with their hands out of the sticking out the window, and they're all moving along at 60 miles an hour. And cars are 10 or 15 feet apart. We have so many trucks, regardless of what happens to the ports, but their ultimate capacity is that in order for that freight corridor to handle enough trucks, we have to get them to operate 40 miles an hour or so, but closer together. And so the platooning concept is something we're looking at, basically with radar or vehicle to vehicle, vehicle to road, with a computer operation that would turn the operation of that over to a computer so the trucks could operate efficiently, conveyor belt of trucks, once again, close together and much more efficiently. We haven't seen that technology yet. We have, unlike cars, we have a, with drayage operation in Southern California, we have a truck with a different chassis and a different container every couple hours. So I think it presents some unique challenges. And so we're gonna figure something out, because necessity being the mother of invention, we can't process the number of trucks we have in that freight corridor without doing some sort of concept like that to increase the throughput. So we'll get back to you and let you know. Hopefully in 3 or 4 months, we'll have some ideas about how to do that.
Thank you. Also for you, Jerry, is electrified truck parking part of the Gateway Cities design for the corridor?
Well, truck parking is an issue for Gateway Cities. The answer is sort of. One of the things we're developing right now are some permanently operating truck enforcement facilities near the two ports, which would also include providing truck parking. At that truck parking location, something that has been done in the past is refueling stations or electrification where the trucks could plug in if they're battery operated. Right now, we don't know what kind of trucks we're going to have or what kind of systems are going to be used for electrification. And there could be overhead catenary, could be linear synchronous motors, or some sort of maglev system embedded in the pavement. There are hydrogen fuel cells, battery operated, CNG, LNG. We have all kinds of different trucks. Part of the challenges for Gateway Cities is, and the trucking industry around our neck of the woods, is that everybody kind of makes their own decision about their type of truck. And so we're trying to figure out the backbone infrastructure system that would allow that to happen, including the dispatch companies. They're required as part of the Clean Air Action Plan for the ports to provide truck parking on site, which takes a lot of room up. But we may have to help them with the cost if we do go to some sort of battery-operated or hydrogen fuel cell, or however it works out, or refueling station stuff to make that possible. I've heard different stories about whether a battery-operated heavy-duty truck's even possible. But we're trying to figure out all these different elements and bring it together, which include, you know, trying to figure out where how to park these trucks. We have some concern and some serious issues about truck parking in our communities, and we need to find out where the trucks can park safely and let them know there's space available and perhaps provide services that aren't currently provided at truck inspection facilities. So we're still trying to figure it out. It's going to be an interesting year to bring all these different diverse elements together in a comprehensive plan. So stay tuned to us again.
Thank you. Jerry, another question for you. There's actually three questions in here. How does the COG fund the ITS plan for goods movement? Do ITS improvements compete with infrastructure projects? And is the ITS plan fully funded?
Well, the first question is the ITS plan for goods movement was funded from a bad word that no longer is used, earmark, that we got a couple years ago, and we're using that along with our own funds to match it. So that's basically have been our source for putting this plan together. ITS projects will compete with the infrastructure projects. We fortunately have, because of a sales tax initiative that was passed a couple years ago, Gateway Cities actually has a few billion dollars that are allocated for our projects, which can include ITS. And therefore, it's important for us to finish the ITS implementation plan, figure out what the costs are, including O&M, and then figure out how to fund those costs once we get all the capital. And is it fully funded? We don't even know what the costs are. We do believe we'll have significant dollars to get things started. Hopefully, then we'll rely on our friends like Randy and others to help us do that. Or there may be a private source of funding. We may find out that some of these ITS programs provide such great information that we may be able to get subscribers and stuff to do that. So that's why the business plan component of the ITS implementation plan is so important, to get the cost and then figure out exactly how we're going to fund it using our source of funding right now, as well as hopefully other state, federal, and regional funds to do that. But we'll know, once again, more about that later this year.
Okay. Jerry, another question back to you. Your comment made previously, is data on wait times at ports publicly available?
Not at this point in time. The 13 or 14 terminals that we have at the two ports kind of operate independently, and it's kind of like, you know, word of mouth. I mean, believe me, the dispatchers know exactly what's going on, but it changes every day. So right now it's not currently available. It says wait times, WAIT, but it's not currently publicly available and could be somewhat controversial. But if we can figure out a way that it benefits all the people, the terminal operators benefit because they're matching up trucks and containers and they're utilizing less equipment on site to move containers around, we have to develop a win-win situation that makes sense for stuff. And I don't think it's as much an issue as with technology as it is with implementation. The infrastructure, the private sector cooperation, as mentioned by some of the other speakers, is extremely important, and we always try to answer the question, what's in it for them? And I don't think we'll have a successful ITS plan unless they see the cost savings or efficiency improvements and that kind of stuff. But it's not currently available.
Hey, Jennifer, if I could add a comment, this is
Sure.
Dan Palmy. On the wait times, and obviously Jerry's speaking specifically towards out in California, but specifically almost all railroads will gather that data and they try to keep track of that data on a ramp-by-ramp specific data. And I'm speaking specifically for railroads. If you're at a certain location, like in here, Memphis, Tennessee, for example, almost all railroads have that. And they have it based upon, because they want to show that their times are in fact better than what the industry thinks. The one caveat to that, though, to be careful on, is that wait is typically based upon the queue or based upon cameras at the point where the driver gets to the gate, not based on queue. So I would take that data. You got to be careful on that data.
I would agree, Ms. Jerry. And the question is also, it's more than just about the wait time. It's also the processing time. We've started to see information. We can get this information exchange done prior to getting to the gate so that it becomes as quick as possible to get through the gate. That really is the number one issue for our truckers around Southern California is terminals in particular, but also at the railroads. The railroads are much more progressive thinking. We have some very large intermodal yards, and they're customizing those to use technology to process the trucks through as quickly as possible. We're hoping to get that into a comprehensive program for both ends of that deal, if you will, at the terminals, at the ports, as well as the rail yards.
Okay. All right. We have a question for Randy. What freight network performance metric can be created using Freightos data, and how does FHWA plan to measure it across the primary freight network proposed in MAP 21?
Well, I think specifically we're looking at travel time, how we can, you know, supplement some of the work we're already doing with travel times. But more focused, our work right now is focused more on the road. I think what we can give in Freightos is more metropolitan area travel times and performance measures related to moving through congested areas and how that affects their overall performance and logistics.
All right, thank you. Well, that's currently all the questions I see typed in at the moment. So if the operator could give instructions on how to ask a question over the phone, we do have some time left. We'll see if anybody has questions over the phone, or you can continue to type in questions.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Again, if you would like to ask a question, press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. There are no questions from the telephone at this time. I'll turn the call back over to the presenters.
Thank you. Well, we did just have one more question come into the chat area, and Randy, I'll direct this to you, but anybody else can jump in. Can you talk a bit more about next steps for Freightos?
Well, right now we're in the process of developing the concept of operations for Freightos. For the last 4 months, we've been conducting the Intermodal Freight Technology Working Group sessions. So we've had a session in Dallas, one in Memphis, one in Los Angeles, Seattle, and yesterday we completed the fifth one in Miami. And this has been the process of gathering the user needs to support Freightos going forward. We'd like to complete the concept of operations by April and hopefully move into some type of test environment by this summer and start forward with more drayage optimization tests and dynamic routing, hopefully start pulling all this information together into the Advanced Traveler portal that we plan on developing. In the process of doing this concept of operations, we look specifically at other technologies, off-the-shelf technologies that are available today that we can incorporate as part of the test. And we're particularly looking for open source, open architecture type technologies that we can integrate our mobility applications into, where we can push and pull data between those applications. So that's kind of the extent of what we're going right now with Freightos. More to come. Hopefully, April will have the final document of the concept of operations.
Okay. Let's see here. For Jerry, what was the most difficult obstacle you faced for implementation, and how have you prioritized your recommendations?
Well, we haven't really prioritized the, as I mentioned earlier, the ITS implementation plan or our plans. Technology plan won't be done for about 6 more months, and so we'll really find out exactly what our it's probably always going to be. Our situation is so complicated; it's really going to be a challenge to set priorities and begin to roll stuff out. Randy and I have talked about this, you know, crawl, walk, then run with respect to this technology plan. One of the things we found with the private industry is if it doesn't work, they quickly drop it. And so we've got to figure out a way to roll this out that makes sense to them or whatever. So I can't answer that question right now, but once again, like some other comments I had, you know, stay tuned, and hopefully by this summer or fall, we'll have a plan pulled together that makes sense and will provide the information. It's really not about technology. It really is about information and cooperation between the public sector and private sector to make everybody get the information and use it, make themselves more efficient. So stay tuned. Well, I can't answer that question right now, unfortunately.
And then a follow-up to that, if you're able to answer, how are you analyzing the recommendations to ensure optimal corridor performance?
Once again, we got to figure that out. What amazed me since we finished the ITS integration plan for goods movement is the explosion in available transportation information. And once we get the ITS implementation plan or the technology plan for goods movement, we'll have some performance measures built into that program so that we'll understand kind of like what happened with Kansas City, okay, how is this working? Are there benefits and that kind of stuff? So once we'll have to build that into the program. That is part of the business plan, is measuring performance and optimization. Do we do any good? And they've got some good examples there from the work they did in Kansas City. We'll build off of that. We certainly want to learn from what other people have done and figure out exactly, you know, is what we're proposing to do once we start implementing it, is it doing any good? But once again, we're not quite there yet. So I'll apologize if I can't answer those questions right now. But later this year, we should be able to have a program put together where we can figure out how we're going to implement it, and then also how we're going to monitor the performance. Are we doing any good?
Okay. Question for Dan. Do you have any other suggestions on where to find data related to performance of the National Freight Network? I'm aware of FHWA sources, but perhaps there are others you have used and found helpful.
I'm sorry, Jennifer, can you repeat that?
Sure. Do you have any other suggestions on where to find data related to performance of the National Freight Network? I'm aware of FHWA sources, but perhaps there are others you have used and found helpful.
Not really, just by Googling and what have you, but I don't know anything off the top of my head.
Okay. Another question for Jerry. With the fast pace of technological innovation and the proprietary nature of freight carrier data, what does the industry see as government's role in improving efficiency of logistics chains? I just keep hearing...
Well, I think it basically, we're trying to answer that question right now with our trucker surveys and other information about what information they need to become more efficient. I think that talked to some of the FHWA staff about, for example, a traffic management center for goods movement, which becomes this clearinghouse of information, and people can then access it and utilize it and provide information that will benefit their operation. And so it really is about information flow, data, as was mentioned earlier. And how they can utilize that information to benefit them. For example, wait times at the terminal gates, terminal A versus terminal B. Right now, the dispatcher has a choice between the two, and if he knows ahead of time that the wait time at terminal A is a couple hours versus terminal B, which is 5 minutes, then he might go to terminal B. So it's about providing information that is scrubbed, as mentioned earlier. Keep proprietary information proprietary, but basically find a way to provide them information in a secure way that they can provide information. I mean, frankly, they know where their trucks are now. I mean, all the newer trucks, GPS and other stuff. In fact, we know where their trucks are. All that information is readily available. We don't know whose truck it is, but it's basically find a forum in which to provide that kind of specific information. They have very specific needs. Can I get from the ports to that warehouse before it closes at 5 o'clock, you know, that kind of thing. And so, once again, I apologize if I can't answer those questions, but hopefully within the next 6 months we'll basically put together this program of information sharing that will make some sense to everybody.
Thank you. Randy, I have a question for you that was just sent directly to me, so you probably didn't see it, but do you see a role for the employment of information technology standards? If so, how might that be considered?
Did you say standards?
Yes.
Oh, yes, definitely. Standards play a huge role in sharing data. And this is a challenge that we've had over the industry. My 35 years of working in transportation, so many different platforms out there, communication today. The railroads primarily use a form of communication called EDI, which is electronic data interchange. Some other carriers use, trucking carriers use a lot of XML. So there's a tremendous problem in really communicating between these environments, and that's the reason we created a data sharing platform where we can share information, which is basically independent of the legacy systems. This is more of a web services type of environment where you're communicating, pushing and pulling. So I think that standards play a huge part in that, and really setting the communications that we were not able to do before, being able to do those with standards of how the data is mapped to these applications and how the data is exchanged. And specifically, they will be the answer to really to infuse the data sharing capability between the partners.
Okay, thank you. Well, I don't see any additional questions typed in at this point. Actually, here is one that just came in. Let's see, I'll put this out to any of the presenters to address. Drivers are paid by the load versus hourly in most cases, and that can make for congestion at terminal entrances. Do you have any perspectives on the use of reservation systems at terminals or rail yards, and what are the cost benefits?
This is Jerry. That's one of our technology plans, one of our little silos, if you will, of information about a potential reservation system. It's, from what I understand, it's been successful, it's not been successful, and once again, it's about information or whatever. Whether it can be successful or not depends. On our case, we have 13 or 14 different terminals who all have their own ideas of whether that can be used or not. So some terminals may decide to use a reservation system, others may not. So once again, it's about information. I think it is part of the solution ultimately. How it unveils itself is yet to be determined.
Okay, thank you.
Excuse me, we've received a telephone question from a participant whose information was not collected. If you've queued up for a question, please state your first and last name. Caller, your line is open. If you've queued up for a question on the telephone, your line is open.
Well, I guess we've lost them.
There are no other questions in the telephone queue.
All right, thank you. Well, we'll go ahead and close out. If you do think of another question while I'm reading these last few things that I want to mention, please go ahead and type them in and we'll go back to the questions. But I do want to thank all four of our presenters and thank everybody for attending today's seminar. The recorded version will be available online within the next few weeks. For those of you who may have missed some of the audio at the beginning, I do apologize for that, but we will have the recording. As a reminder, if you're an AICP member and would like to receive 1.5 certification maintenance credits for today, please make sure you are signed in with your first and last name, or if you are attending with a group, please make sure you type your name into the chat box. I do want to mention that today's seminar is not yet available on the AICP calendar, but it should be up there soon, and as soon as it is available for credits, I will send an email out to everybody. I encourage everybody attending to download the evaluation form that's available in the file download box in the lower right corner of the screen, and send it to me after you've completed it. The next seminar will be held on February 15th. This webinar is not currently available for registration, but I'll send a notice out through the Freight Planning Listserv once it is. The Freight Planning Listserv is our primary mechanism for announcing the Talking Freight seminars, as well as other freight news, and it's also a great discussion forum. We currently have about 1,000 members from the public and private sectors. So if you haven't already joined it, I do encourage you to sign up for it, and the web address of which you could do so is showing on the slide on your screen. So it doesn't look like we have any additional questions, so we'll go ahead and close out for today. So thank you, everybody, and have a good rest of the day.